A fancy education does not make me wise. How about that? This is Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with Absolute Philosopher. A fancy education does not make me wise. Why do we say something like that? Well, we have a lot of people who've gone through Harvard and Yale and Princeton and Oxford and all the great colleges in the world, the great universities in the world, and they have come out and have not ennobled themselves by anything that they've done. A few have. But if you were to take all the graduates from these schools, or just take one school, say take Yale, all the graduates from Yale, and you take, let's say, 5,000 graduates from Yale. And of those 5,000 graduates, how many have made something of themselves that the world considers a noble gesture, you know? Now, I think you'll find out that not too many. Many have gone on to make a good living. They've gone on to have a good reputation. They wear the Yale tie, the Princeton tie, the Oxford tie. You know, they have all the paraphernalia that goes along with belonging to that school, and they play that game. But how many of them are the leaders of industry? Well, they like to say that of their school, so many have become president of the United States. Of their school, so many of them have become noble as great lawyers and great barristers or whatever. And this is wonderful. This is wonderful. However, percentage-wise, how many of them, of the whole group, entered into something of significance of that nature, if that's what we call significance? And we'll find that the number is, on an average, the same as it is for virtually every other school. Now, while it's true that the normal institutions, the schools that educate you in a field, preparing you to be a MBA or something of that nature, these normal schools do not prepare you for the greatness that you are. But how do you know how Harry Truman was prepared for being the President of the United States? And you say, well, he was just a haberdasher. Well, he was much more than that. He was just selling hats and selling clothing and things like that. He was much more than that. He was a person who believed in himself. And he gussied up with all of the politicians and put himself in the right position at the right time to do the right thing. You see, if the truth is known, and I'm about to tell it to you, if the truth is known, very few people want to become the President of the United States. Very few people want to become the judges on the Supreme Court. That's a pain in the neck. But you have to want to have glory and fame and recognition to go for those things. So you see, going to a fine school merely is a chalk on your finger of saying that, hey, I've done that. But it does not mean anything. It does not mean anything. If the drive within you is not there to achieve high levels of competence, you don't have it. That's why we say a fancy education does not make me wise. A fancy education merely gives me the credentials that say that I'm supposed to be smart. And that's not always true. You look at the great universities and colleges of the world, and the majority of the people who come through there are fine people. They're people who have desires and creative ideas of what they want to be, but the institution of itself does not make them into the beautiful beings that they are. Who are the beautiful presidents of the United States? Who are the beautiful judges of the Supreme Court? Are these the kind of people with feeling and sensitivity and care? How does the Supreme Court, is the judge selected? Well, the President of the United States. has a committee, and he goes out and he selects these things and puts these things in motion and has a good time doing it. Okay? Now, does that mean that having been at a major university is going to benefit them? It could, because the president doesn't name any dum-dums, you know. He names people who are competent and capable and able. And in naming people who are competent, capable, and able, it usually means that they have a few diplomas from high-degree universities. Now, here we are, and we want to be wise. Fancy education does not make me wise. What makes me wise? What makes anyone wise? What makes anyone know the right thing to do at the right time in the right way for the right purpose for themselves? Now, how does anyone know that? Well, they listen within. And as they listen within, they get the answer. Schooling, high education, oftentimes teaches us not to listen within. It teaches us that we must be realistic. We must be look at the facts, all the facts. We must have all the details. And yet, the details don't make the difference. The details don't make the difference. I've been reading a little bit about jurisprudence recently. And in reading about it, I've been finding out how many judges and how many people of high esteem have done things that they shouldn't have done. And because of their relationship and because of the people they knew, they got off. They were not found guilty for doing things that they did. And they were even given higher positions, higher things, because the people who put them into higher places, they did not want an honest judge. They wanted someone that they could manipulate, someone that they could control to give them a little edge on their business relationships. Now, the world is coming into a interesting thing. And this is the information age, where all things are known by everybody everywhere. And whether it's true or false, all things are known. And these things that are known are used as criteria for the actions. When the two women came before Solomon, do you think Solomon was interested in hearing their story? Mm-hmm. Do you think that Solomon was interested in knowing who the real mother was? Solomon was interested in one thing. He knew that if he had an emotional ploy, if he would have an emotional response to these women, that the real mother would stand up. So he did the outrageous thing, which was, what would you say, not very nice. He challenged the women as to which one was their child. He abused the women. He mentally and physically abused the women by saying to them, whose child is this? Which of you women gave birth to this child as the mother? Yeah. And so the women didn't listen. The mother didn't listen. The mother heard what he was going to do because he telegraphed his punch. He told ahead of time that we'll cut the child in half and then you'll each have half. And so the real mother said, hey, that is not my choice. I want my son to live and to be healthy and to be happy and to have a great life. And the only way for my son to do this is to be alive. And so the wisdom was expressed by that way. But you see, he did not allow himself by his virtue of his being the king to make the decision. He did not allow himself by virtue of his being the judge for all the people who came to him. He did not allow by virtue of the fact that he could do anything he damn pleased, you know, in his work with the mothers. He merely was down to earth and spoke to them about what interested them most, the child. And so, you see, where does that wisdom come from? That wisdom doesn't come from school. That wisdom doesn't come from the great institutions. That wisdom doesn't come from fancy colleges. That wisdom comes from not your heart, not your emotion. That wisdom comes from an inner awareness of what to do. Now, if you see the wall eroding away as the flood is encroaching the river's edge, and you see some children on the river's edge watching the encroaching flood, is your thought to first embank the river to protect it so others will not be washed away? Or is your first thought to go over and grab those children and take them to safety? And if your first thought is to grab those children and take them to safety, you're not a very universal man, because you could be putting sandbags on the edge and protecting the dike for the rest of the community that lay behind. But no, you act upon your first thought, your first emotion. Now, would a wise man do that? Would a person who is really thinking do that? No. He would look at the overall picture. Why is it that they allow themselves to lose 1,000 men in battle, whereas if they had one conversation between the two parties, they could have avoided that? Or if the general had just made the choice, he says, okay guys, we're going this way, which was the opposite way the enemy was going. So the enemy went to the right, and you went to the left, and you never met.
Bye.
And you say, well, you don't win a battle that way. Oh, you do. You do. You win life. Now, let's just add another little idea to that story. The general goes to the left, another one goes to the right, and then, in the middle of your movement, the war is over. Mm-hmm. And so you have saved killing 1,000 people just because you avoided confrontation. Now you say, well, war is not like that. We can't do that in war. Well, you go ahead and fight your war the way you want, and I'll fight mine the way I want. I do not fight a war. I engage peace and harmony and right action. Now, I call that wisdom. Now, I don't know what you call it, but I call it wisdom. And I think every one of us would call it wisdom if we gave ourselves an opportunity to think about it. Really. We all have the opportunity to be peacemakers. And we're peacemakers right where we are. We say, now there is peace on earth, and it began with me. And because there is peace on earth, and it began with me, there's no war. There's no conflict. There's no unhappiness. And I love it. And I love you.
I love you.
Have a wonderful day, and know I love you. I love you.
I love you.